Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Ally on the Run show. I'm your host, Ally Feller, and you are listening to episode 13. Today, I'm talking to Chris Mosier. Chris is a Hall of Fame triathlete and duathlete and was called the man who changed the Olympics by the BBC and New York Magazine. So, same. He's a barrier-breaking Nike-sponsored athlete who you may have seen in Nike's commercials during the 2016 Rio Olympics. He's a three-time Ironman and was named Best Personal Trainer in the Northeast by Competitor Magazine in 2014. Chris is also transgender, and I think he might be the first trans person I ever really met and got to know. Turns out growing up in Kentuckook, New Hampshire does not make for a super diverse landscape. Chris and I have become super close over the past few years, and I'm so grateful for him because he's answered so many of my questions about what it means to be transgender. So when I asked him to come on the show, I asked if we could do a little Trans 101, and if I could ask a lot of the questions I asked or wanted to ask early on in our friendship. Chris and I met long before the days of Caitlyn Jenner, so I didn't really know anything about what it meant to be transgender. Chris very kindly, patiently, and open-mindedly answered my questions, both when we met and again for this show. I appreciate that he never made me feel stupid for asking, well, possibly stupid questions. And here are just a few more plugs for Chris. He was the first transgender athlete to be featured in the ESPN magazine Body issue and was named Person of the Year by OutSports. In 2015, he became the first openly transgender man to make a men's U.S. national team when he qualified for the sprint duathlon team. And he was a catalyst for change in the International Olympic Committee policy on transgender athletes. When he's not training his butt off, Chris is the Vice President of Program Development and Community Relations for You Can Play, is an online coach for Daily Burn, and is a hotline volunteer with the New York City Anti-Violence Project. He lives in Chicago, but he flew to New York City to record this episode with me in person, and probably to do some other stuff, but mostly to see me in real life. Finally, if you haven't done so yet, I would so love it if you would subscribe to the Ally on the Run show on iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. You're here already, which is awesome, and I'm so happy to have you. And I promise leaving a quick rating and review is super easy, just like eating a whole pint of Ben & Jerry's ice cream or an entire box of Annie's mac and cheese in one sitting. Very easy. As a reminder, new episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday, and there's so much more good stuff to come. Now hit the road, the treadmill, or the trails, and enjoy my conversation with Chris Mosier. All right, so we are here with Chris Mosier, and this is a big deal because Chris lives in Chicago now. We became friends in New York City, and he is here for like 24 hours and made time to sit down and be on the Ally on the Run show.
I am so excited.
I'm excited to have you. So, Chris, we start this podcast like any good run. We start it with a warm-up. Tell everyone who you are, where you're from, and what you do.
Great. My name is Chris Mosier, and my pronouns are he, him, and his. I am currently living in Chicago, Illinois, but I previously was here in New York where I met you for 12 years. I'm a triathlete and duathlete and came to that through running, and I'm the first transgender man to make a men's U.S. national team.
So Chris is a badass. I mean, everyone on the show is, let's be honest. But yeah, we're going to talk in a little bit. We'll talk about Team USA and all of the like cool stuff on your, I hope you have like an athlete specific resume that's just like, here's all the cool stuff I've done and here are all my medals. And but yes, as Chris mentioned, one thing that stands out in his intro that you might have noticed is he listed his pronouns. That is because Chris is transgender and he was the first transgender person I ever met, which is a big reason. I mean, I wanted to have him on the show because he's awesome. He's such a good friend, such a good guy. And also because, and I will be totally honest, that throughout the course of this episode, I might sound kind of dumb, and I don't want to, but when it comes to the topic of being transgender and all of the labels that come with that, I knew nothing about that before I met Chris. And I know, you know, now we have Caitlyn Jenner, right? So more people are familiar with the topic, which whether you love Caitlyn, hate Caitlyn, love Bruce, hated Bruce, whatever, it brought some light to the topic, which ultimately I think that's a good thing. But for me, I knew Chris before there was a Caitlyn Jenner, and I'm so grateful for that because I've learned probably more from Chris than any other person that I know.
That's like, I just put you on such a high pedestal.
Yeah, totally.
It's like, hey, everyone else in my life, you haven't taught me anything. But I really want to use this episode as an opportunity to talk a lot about your background and to really educate the masses, because there is a chance that everyone listening to this is like, well, no, Allie, of course I know everything about being transgender and everything that goes into that. But mm-hmm. I still don't. And I definitely didn't before we met.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of questions.
Yeah, so here's a fun statistical thing. Last year I presented at South by Southwest, which was amazing. And one of the pullout moments there was that if you compare statistics side by side, so one study about people who think that they've seen a ghost versus a study of people in America who know someone transgender, more people in the United States believe they have had a paranormal experience than actually know a trans person in real life.
Wow.
And so,
I've never seen a ghost.
Yeah, but you know me, so you're one of the outliers, I guess.
Yeah,
but
that's so interesting.
There's really a piece of when you know somebody, when you have a name and a face to an identity, it really humanizes it. It really helps people understand it. So that's part of why I'm here, I think. You know, not just here on this podcast, but like here on this earth.
On this planet.
Yes, exactly. For people to have these conversations with me so that more people know, like more people are educated, and people who might not run into this, like, I don't know, you know, all of your listeners know a trans person, but you know, this is a cool opportunity for me to speak to you and to them.
Yeah, and I have to give you credit. So Chris is an amazing, tremendous advocate for the transgender community, for transgender rights, and that's another way that I've learned so much is from you, even just posting on Facebook, like, about all these bathroom laws and all that stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I think, if not for you, that stuff might cross my mind. I might read it in the headlines, but to be able to actually put a person in that scenario, like, for me to say, okay, wait, so you want my friend Chris, my male friend Chris, to use a woman's bathroom? Like, that's insane.
Right.
And I think if I didn't have that friend, Chris, mm-hmm. I would still think it's insane, but it's to be able to actually like picture someone you know and love in that situation. It just humanizes it and it brings a lot more rage to right. the scenario and power to you. You stay so calm. Like, I think that if I face a lot of the things and a lot of the conversations that you face, I think I would be an asshole. And you're not. So let's back up if we can.
Yeah, yeah.
First of all, Chris and I met through November Project, as is the case with so many people that I know and adore these days. We went to November Project together this morning, which was wonderful. And we just met at a workout. I don't know if there was any like specific, hey, you guys are partners. We've been partners before, but for various workouts. But you know, it was just the group was much smaller then.
Right.
And you knew everyone who was there. Mm-hmm. So we met at November Project and just became friends because Chris was always smiling and I'm like, ooh, me too. Let's smile together. So.
And I'm a world-class hugger.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really, I was probably one of your first hugs.
That's probably true. And every hug from you is memorable, which I appreciate.
That's
so
amazing.
how old are you now?
36.
36.
Yeah.
I'm 31. I just wanted to say that.
Great.
I
don't know. Thanks.
People always wonder. I always want to know how old people are.
Yeah.
You know, I assume everyone that I meet at November Project, I assume they're 26.
Correct.
Or maybe now like 28.
Right.
But like, I now feel older than a lot of people there. So.
Yeah. I feel great about being 36. Like, every year that I get older has been a better year than the last. And I think that's like one of the benefits of growing up and being in a good spot that there's a little sadness to leave the 20s sometimes.
No,
and I just have been
ready.
Loving my 30s.
Yeah, I agree. I'm only almost 2 years into them, but I am, 30s. If you're listening and you're in your 20s,
it gets better.
Best.
It gets better.
If you're listening and you're in your 40s, 50s, or 60s, feel free to chime in or let us know if we should be looking forward to things or if we should just be living it up now. So can you tell me about... And tell me if I am phrasing things in the wrong way. Like, I am all about being educated. You say that you knew that you were transgender, you were in the wrong body when you were 4. Because you were born a female.
Right.
So can you tell me about, like, when did you know and what does that feel like?
Yeah, so I can kind of set it up for you. So I was assigned female at birth, or designated female at birth is what people would say. And I think at a very young age, I didn't know I was transgender at the age of four. That was my first memories of gender not really lining up with society's expectations. And I really believe that young people have a very clear sense of who they are as a person, you know, more so than we give any young person credit for. I certainly felt like I knew who I was in terms of, you know, certainly not what I was going to be when I grow up, or, you know, how I would be as a person, but I felt like I knew what was right for me in terms of my actions and my likes, my dislikes, and things like that. And it wasn't until adults in my life started to tell me that that was wrong that I started to feel different and other and not like my peers. So that moment that you referred to at the age of four, I've shared with others in the past that we were running around the neighborhood, and it was a bunch of boys and myself with our shirts off because it was really hot. And my aunt pulled me around the back of the house and said, "You can't run around like that. You're a little girl. You need to put a shirt on." And I looked around and I was like, there's all these little four-year-old bodies here, and they all look the same. And I didn't really understand what the difference was between myself and the little boys. I think there were more and more cases of that, and part of that was the fear of, you know, of parents or of aunts, uncles, like people telling me, "You can't wear your hat backwards like that. People are gonna think you're a little boy." And I was like, that's great. Like, I didn't understand it.
I look dope. My hat looks amazing. So,
and you have to think that that was like, you know, early 90s. So right. I really did look dope.
Yeah.
It was great. But, you know, as time went on, I started to realize that who I thought that I was and how I thought that I would grow up to be, you know, and mostly when puberty hit, was not actually what was happening to me, or the self that I knew inside wasn't being reflected back in the mirror. And that's where I started to feel this sort of discrepancy. But, you know, I didn't have the language, the terminology, the word transgender.
Or the internet
in my, you know, I didn't have that vocabulary or that understanding of that identity until, you know, until into and after college. And so it was really a very long time of just feeling, I didn't feel like a man. I knew I wasn't a man, but I also didn't feel like a woman. And so I didn't identify as a woman. I just didn't really talk about it. And I just knew that there was something different, or, you know, not like my peers, not like the other women on my basketball team, or, you know, my volleyball team. And so that was kind of, you know, my understanding of it. And it really wasn't until reading books, my partner kind of guiding me to some research and some more understanding, that I got the terminology to say, oh, okay, here's this identity, transgender, where, you know, and I'll just be real basic. So transgender is a term for people whose gender identity, or how they feel inside about their gender, does not match the gender or sex they were assigned at birth. So I was designated female. I felt not really like a woman, and I present masculinely. I prefer and use he, him, his pronouns. And, you know, I identify as a trans man, or a trans guy. Trans dude is fine too.
Trans dude, yes.
Any of those. So that was kind of, you know, I got that terminology and I was like, this fits for me. And then I had to think about all of the rest of the stuff to kind of get from there to where I am now.
So did it just click when you were like, oh, this is a thing? Were you like, that is me? Because I think that, I think a big, you know, a general issue in society, or that we're so desperate to put labels on things.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's where I, even with talking about a lot of these topics, is I'm like, I'm so afraid of using the wrong label. And I don't mean the pronouns. Mm-hmm. Like, super comfortable with that. I get that. That to me is like a non thing.
Right.
But like, I think with like sexuality and being transgender, because I know in the past I've said, okay, well, if my friend, you know, at birth was a female and is now a male, but was dating women and is now, like, does that mean you're a lesbian? And then I always stop and I'm like, well, why do I even need to, what label, like, what, why is that even a thing? But I think it's because we're so used to putting people in their categories, and wherever you end up wanting to be is fine, but it's like, okay, but are you a straight transgender male, or, you know? And it's just, there's so many, that is something that's always confused me.
Yeah.
And I catch myself doing it and I'm like, well, why do I care? Or why, like, and I think you were the one who taught me, and I know this is totally like trans 101 is that you were like, it's not about what you're attracted to, it's about what you are. Like, that you being transgender, if I'm correct, has nothing to do with whether you're attracted to males or females. It's about who you are.
Yeah, so being transgender is a gender identity, and lesbian, gay, bisexual, asexual are sexual orientations. Mm-hmm. So every trans person has a sexual orientation as well, and they're not related, right? So trans people, just like cisgender, and cisgender is a word that has really become more popular in the last couple of years, as the media has talked more about transgender stories. And cisgender is someone who is whose designation at birth lines up with how they are now, right? So basically it's kind of non-transgender. But everybody has a sexual orientation. And so, you know, I identify as queer. I say my sexual orientation is actually David Beckham.
Same.
I know, right? So we have that in common. But queer is also the word that I use. But I could have any sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. You know, people see me on the street and they see me with my wife and they assume me to be a straight man. Right. So, you know, trans people have a sexual orientation as well. And you're right. So this is probably the reason that I felt so uncomfortable before my transition, was that I didn't really identify as a woman, but I didn't identify as a man either. And I didn't know, I just knew the two check boxes. I didn't really know that there was a spectrum in between. Right, and that everybody kind of falls on the spectrum, and whether we're on far on one side, you know, far on the male side, far on the female side, or somewhere in the middle, and all this comes through in how we present ourselves, how we feel masculine or feminine, you know, our gender expression, all of that. I didn't understand that, and so when I would pass people on the street, if people couldn't identify me as either male or female, because there was a period of time where I was pretty androgynous, and I thought that I could, you know, that was a good space for me. Like, I actually thought, okay, so I know I'm not, you know, I don't feel like a woman, and I know I'm not a man, so maybe I can just live in this middle space, have people call me he sometimes, which I felt was awesome, have people call me she sometimes and be like, whatever, and then, you know, just kind of live in that space. But when people would see me on the street, if they couldn't identify me as male or female, I would get harassed. And so, you know, it happened in school spaces, it happened in social spaces, it happened at work, that it made people very uncomfortable if they couldn't put me in a box, which made me feel unsafe. And so for many years leading up to my transition, I just wanted to fade into the background. You know, I didn't want to show up fully and participate in anything. I would be that person on the side on my phone, you know, on my flip phone.
Like then. Like Snake.
Right, obviously.
That was the only game.
But I didn't want to engage with people because it felt unsafe, because people couldn't label me in
and
a way.
And it's so interesting how, like, you were, like, in a place where you were kind of comfortable, or being in between, or you know, figuring out where you were comfortable, and it made other people more uncomfortable.
Yeah, I was a super confident kid, and I think part of that was playing sports. Mm-hmm. And I found a lot of community in sports and playing on sports teams, because no matter how weird people thought that I was, they valued me because I was a good player. And so because I could contribute to the team, you know, they wanted me on the team. And so I made friends that way, and I found family and community in athletics. And then as I kind of, you know, grew out of playing team sports in high school and moved into college, I started to kind of lose some of that confidence. And I think that coincides with adults telling me that I was wrong, or people starting to harass me because they couldn't, you know, figure out a label for me. Mm-hmm. You know, they had never met someone like me. And even though I didn't identify as transgender at that time, my showing up in the way that I did made other people uncomfortable, which then knocked some of the confidence out of me.
Of course, how can it not?
Yeah.
Did you grow up in Chicago?
I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago.
And where'd you go to college?
Northern Michigan University.
Nice.
Yeah.
So tell me about your decision to transition then. How old were you, and was there a moment that you were like, yes, I'm doing this, or was it gradual, or just...
Yeah.
I won't speak.
So I didn't know that I was transgender even in college. Even in grad school, it was probably the first time that it came across my radar, and so at that point I was 23 maybe, and I remember sitting in a class about college student development, and we were talking about LGBTQ issues, And it was the first time I'd had like formal conversation in an academic setting about this sort of stuff. And one of my classmates, and at this time I again was, you know, presenting, I was presenting kind of androgynous, masculine in my appearance, but still, you know, was a woman and didn't really identify, but people didn't know that. And so we were in this classroom and this woman was like talking about transgender people and turned and looked at me and said, "No offense, Chris." And I was like, "Wait, what? What?" And it just kind of slapped me across the face because I was like, "Wait, what?
Where That's did that not- come from?"
I had no idea, and it was, yeah, and that was exactly my reaction, that I had no clue, no idea where it came from, and it really made me start to think, and we were talking about women who don't wear dresses, and it was, like, very much about physical appearance, mm-hmm. and I had cut my hair short at that time, and, you know, kind of was moving more in a masculine-presenting direction, but it was very much like, I don't think that's me. And then I started to think about it, and I think that was just like the seed that got planted. But it really wasn't until after that I moved to New York, and even in a city like New York, which is so incredibly diverse, it has such a large LGBTQ population, and I should say LGBTQ just because I'm going to keep it real basic, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer or questioning. So LGBTQ population here, I didn't know any trans people in real life. And so I learned a lot about it from watching YouTube videos. So once it was kind of on my radar, my partner, who's now my wife, knows a lot more about LGBTQ stuff than I did and was like, "Hey, you really need to think about, you know, just read some of this stuff," and just kind of like gently pointed me in the direction of getting a little more education to see if anything fit for me. And I started to read these books and I was like, "This is all sounding very familiar and very much like my experience," which I think I was looking for so long because I felt like I was totally alone. And I was the only person going through this in the entire world, you know, and I didn't have a word for what this quote unquote was. And when I started to see these YouTube videos, it was young people documenting their transitions. And so it was, you know, this is me before taking testosterone. And, you know, I've been on testosterone T. For 2 weeks, and here's the things that are happening, here's how I came out of my job, you know, all of these different things. And all of this just really, I felt like this fits for me. So it was really interesting to see that, but at the same time, I didn't see anybody that looked like me. At that time, I was 27, 28 years old, and I didn't see anybody who had real grown-up professional jobs, which I had mm-hmm. been working for 4 years at a university at that point. And I also didn't see anybody who was an athlete. And I had just started, had been running for a while, and I was just looking to start triathlons. And I was competing as a woman and started to do pretty well. In New York City races, that felt like a really big deal for me to be top 10. And
yeah, especially in New York, I'm normally like top 11,000, right. And I'm like, "Ooh, crushed it, broke the top 12,000.
Yeah, or you know, like to be, you know, in the upper percent of finishers as a young, unexperienced racer, because I kind of came into racing later on, and I thought, you know, being a competitive athlete has been something that's been important to me since I was very, very young. I would always say I was an athlete, always say I'm competitive. And so that piece was really important. And I started to think, like, as I started to think about what transition might mean, and for me, that meant taking testosterone. So testosterone would align my body a little bit more with how I felt inside. So, you know, deepening voice, and I really want a beard, but I don't have one yet. And like, you know, just it changes some of those sex characteristics. Mm-hmm. And help me feel more at home in my own skin. And in order to do that, it would have meant transitioning categories too. Now, on one hand, I really wanted to do that because I felt more closely aligned with men, but at the same time, I'd never seen anybody do that before, and I didn't know if I could do it. There were no policies out there. I knew that I would have to get clearance from people. You know, a good example is New York Roadrunners. So I was listed as female with all my race results. And then I was like, how do I make the category switch? You know, I have to tell people that this is my identity. And that felt really scary to me. And so I delayed my transition for over a year just because of that sports piece.
Wow.
I had committed to it full on. Like, I'm going to come out at work. I'm going to come out at. I went back to NYU to finish my grad degree, and I went into the school as male, and I was still female at work, and I was still female in races, and it was just really like a year of living this double life because I couldn't figure out how to transition fully in the sports area.
How was you mentioned your wife, mm-hmm. that she was a key player in this, which I didn't know that. I guess because I know you now, that to me there's no like Chris pre-transition. Like, even when you were talking about being a little kid and running around, I'm picturing a little boy Chris.
Yeah.
Just because I don't know that I can't even like picture that, and I don't need to. So how was it with your wife, with your family? Was everyone really, I guess I look and I'm like, Chris is so well adjusted, he's so comfortable, like obviously everyone in his life must have been super supportive. Was that the case or was that not the case?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously my wife is the most supportive person ever, and we've been together for 15 years now. So she has seen me through this entire process, and I honestly, you know, couldn't have asked for a better support system. On the toughest of days, she's really been what's gotten me through. And she also knew a lot more about this than I did, and so...
How did she know more? Because you've mentioned that.
She identified as queer in high school.
Okay.
And so, you know, my high school experience, I was dating men, and I, even through college, was dating men, and she was the first woman that I dated, and so I sort of had this other experience of having to come out as gay, but not really ever coming out, because I didn't feel like a woman. And so it was really interesting for me in a relationship with a woman that people looked at us and saw us as a lesbian couple.
Right.
But I hated that word because I didn't feel like a woman. And so the word lesbian didn't apply to me. And so it was really an interesting, you know, period of time of, well, it happened in my last year of college and then into, you know, just leaving college that we got together. And I was so fearful of telling my friends that I was gay, because I didn't really know a lot of gay people, that I would change her pronouns sometimes at the beginning.
Really?
And because I was in California, my friends were in Michigan, and I was like, I can't do this. This is ridiculous. I was just being really vague about who I was dating. And I then just kind of stopped communicating with people, with my old friends, because I thought that was an easier solution than telling them that I was gay. I was so fearful of the reaction that I would get, and just because it was so new to me, and I didn't know how to live my life as a queer person.
Did you go to like therapy or anything at the time? Like, were you? I know you said you felt alone. Were you talking to anyone about all of this?
Yeah. So I did not go to therapy when we first got together, and I was kind of understanding myself to be a queer person. Mm-hmm. And queer is my preferred terminology. Gay also works, but I think queer is a better fit for me.
Is there a difference? Can you explain?
Totally. So queer is sometimes a word just for like for the umbrella of LGBTQ identity.
Right.
And so instead of saying LGBTQ, you can say queer. And the old term used to be gay. So it's like the gay community, but to be more inclusive of lesbian, bisexual, transgender people, queer became that sort of umbrella term where everything can kind of fit under it. But queer can also be a gender identity. So some people are gender queer, which means not fitting in a particular label. And same thing for, you know, for sexual orientation. So instead of saying I'm gay or straight, I can say I am queer.
Okay.
Because that David Beckham joke, while it lands every time, people don't really get it.
Got it. How cool that your wife, that she, because I imagine, mm-hmm. like, I'm not taking any credit away from you and what you have been through. I imagine that is emotionally, physically difficult in so many ways. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we don't often hear from the other side. Like, maybe I'll have your wife on the next episode, because I would love, like, some of that perspective about what it's like being the significant other of someone who's going through all this, because my guess is in a lot of cases it probably doesn't end up working out, because...
Right.
You know, I guess to put it, it's not the same. But like if Brian came to me mm-hmm. tonight and was like, hey, you know, I identify differently than you think and mm-hmm. I want to transition, and then it's like, oh, like would I be up for that? Would I be able to say like, I love Brian so much for the person that he is, if that means he looks different or identifies different, like am I into that? I don't know.
Yeah, and she very much loves people, and I don't think her love of me was never attached to my gender identity right. or my gender. It was very much for me as a person, and I'm so blessed for that, because also, I mean, I made it in. She pursued me also, and which was great for me because I skipped the whole dating part, and I don't have to do any of this online dating stuff, which just sounds totally miserable. And you know, it was a blessing for me because she came with so many gifts. You know, she, in terms of like support and education and also just, you know, unconditional love, which a lot of trans people are not as blessed to have gotten, you know, that whether it was telling my family or on really rough days where I'd go out and people would misgender me and it was really, you know, impacted me hard and during a certain period of time. She was always the rock, so, and she was totally unfazed. I think she wanted more than anything for me to be happy and to be a full person, because for a while, I think before transition, I was really just the shell of a person. You know, like I was not fully there because I was holding back. I wasn't fully and authentically myself, and I think now I'm a much better person
yeah,
now.
Yeah, you are literally now never the person in the corner playing Snake on your phone.
Yeah.
Like, that's
yeah.
another time that I'm like, wait, Chris Mosier, who? Like, you are, like,
yeah.
life of the party, center of the room, yeah. outspoken, comfortable.
That's so interesting because while I am a Leo, that's very much not my, you know, the center of attention thing is still really hard for me, and even with the rest of the stuff that I know we'll talk about later on, like, you know, the attention that I've gotten since making Team USA, since being in ESPN, all of those things, has been a challenge for me behind the scenes. Mm. I think I'm good at you know, in public and being personable when I need to, but I think I'm an introvert really in terms of my recharging, that I just need to, if I'm at, say, a group workout where there's 300 people, I can engage, but then it takes a lot out of me.
Right.
So
okay.
I know that's a balance about myself.
So do you face people who are just jerks and are like, no, I'm not going to change what, like, I feel like we see that in, I mean, you are one of the greatest advocates of don't read the comments.
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel like that's something you see is where people are just kind of ignorant about it. And they're like, well, no, you're still a woman or you're still a she. And like, they refuse.
Right.
And it's like, well, I'm telling you what I am. Why are you trying to tell me what I am?
It took
me. Is that something that's hard to deal with, or do you just brush that stuff off?
Yeah, it took me a really long time to get to the point where I am now, but I know that that's a them problem mm-hmm. and not a me problem. And for a long time, I internalized that, like, I was doing something wrong. Like, why are people not calling me he? Why are they not seeing me how I actually am? How I know myself to be inside? And that was just, you know, some people are just jerks. And that's,
yep.
again, I say, never read the comments.
Oh,
sometimes
no.
when I post things on Facebook, I won't even read the comments on my own post because some of them are offensive. And I wonder how people made it to my page as a transgender athlete to talk badly
yeah,
about trans
people.
Why
are you here? Like, go, there are lots of corners of the internet that you can go be in.
Yeah,
you don't
yeah.
need to be in mine.
Yeah, so part of it is ignorance, and part of it is, you know, for people who had known me, I understood that my transition was a transition for everyone around me.
Right.
And I was so blessed that it was a very easy transition for my partner, you know, for my wife. It was almost a non-issue. So sometimes when I say that, like, it's a transition for everyone, she's very much like, I was cool. She's a rock star. She's like, it was not a big deal to me. And, you know, but for my mother, who had a daughter and two sons and then had three sons, right? I understood that
right.
that would be a transition for her. And, you know, and so family sometimes gets a pass with the pronouns if they screw up, because my mom knew me for 29 years as her daughter, as she, and I imagine, and, you know, we haven't really had great conversations about her feelings about it, but I imagine that that's a challenge for her. And so I get that.
Yeah. And you're so good at talking about all of this, and I think that makes it easier for other people. Like, even me, like, I am embarrassing myself right now by asking stupid questions, and I need you to be like, you can't say that. But, like, I feel like, as you know, from my perspective, like, my goal is to be, I'm very open-minded and loving and welcoming, and I am someone who just wants to understand, and I want to know how to best talk about things. And I'm really grateful to know you for a million reasons that have nothing to do with you being transgender, just being a human. Right. But no, I think it's so important to be able to have these conversations.
There were two things that happened when I came out. And the first was that I knew when I came out publicly, after my first Ironman race, which is my first race as male, I decided to write an article for The Advocate magazine about my experience as a transgender Ironman. And I knew that coming out at that time would just be a one-time decision because of the internet. And so I will never just be a regular athlete. I will always be the trans athlete. And you know, so that was the first decision. The second was that I knew that I'm in an incredible position to help educate people because of the privilege that I have. And so not only did I transition from being a sort of masculine female or woman in a relationship with a woman, you know, kind of nobody really cared and it was fine, and I kind of faded in the background, I transitioned to be perceived as a straight white man. And so I was really handed a lot of privilege cards when I transitioned. And I wasn't prepared for that. The social, you know, capital that I gained in transition, and yet having been raised and socialized as female. And so I had that experience of being a young girl, young woman, and seeing what young girls and women experience, and now being in a position where, you know, when I walk into a bodega, I'm the first to get responded to, or if I'm sitting at a table with women, the guy brings me the check, right? And so but it's been a really interesting, you know, dynamic, and that I know, you know, I had a job in higher education where I wasn't fearful of losing my employment or my housing. I have the most amazing partner, and you know, had all of this support system, so I'm in a position where I can speak out and be an educator about it, because I recognize that I'm kind of a unicorn in, you know, in terms of public figures in athletics, that I position myself in a way that, you know, being the one of the first trans guys to speak out as an athlete, you know, there weren't other people sharing the message that I have. So I have an opportunity to talk about sports and talk about trans identity, and also to reach this population where, you know, you as a runner didn't know any other trans people, but you might have known trans people who just actually weren't talking about their transgender identity. And so, you know, the more that we can talk about and understand other people's identities, the more we can show up in community and feel like we all belong.
Oh, are you gonna write a book someday?
Yeah.
Okay. Totally. Great. Feel free to use the transcript of this conversation.
Great.
For any notes you need. I want to get into talking more about sports and all of that, because you're a tremendous athlete. But before that, what is something that, in your opinion, people just don't understand about being transgender, and that you wish for everyone who's listening? What is something you just wish people understood?
A couple things. I'll go down my list. So we've covered some of them, but transgender is a gender identity. Being transgender is different than being gay, lesbian, bisexual, or any other sexual identity. Every trans person has a sexual orientation, and they're totally separate. The second thing would be trans women are women. Trans men are men, period. You know, there's this idea that a trans man is a woman who hates men or wants to be a man but isn't really a man, or this idea that trans women are men in dresses and they're just trying to get access to women's spaces. And this is an argument that we hear a lot in these bathroom bills, right? Of like this sort of that people's identities as transgender are not authentic. And it is a very authentic, you know, deep-seated identity. Plus, I would say no one transitions for athletic accomplishments. You know, there's no trans person who would go through all of the discrimination and hardships of being a trans person. And there are some great things about being trans too. Like I love my life and I have a very blessed life, but there are very hard times because people don't understand my identity, and because there are now bills and laws and, you know, people are trying to restrict my access to really basic public services. And so it can be challenging sometimes to face public perception, but no one transitions for athletic achievement. And so, you know, the argument that trans women are transitioning so that they can be a man who dominates in women's spaces.
Yeah, that's the goal. I want to play seventh instead of eighth.
Right.
So I'm going to go through all of this.
All of this,
and
right.
Change my entire life.
Right. And the final thing is that there's not just one way to be transgender. And so just as there are so many other ways to be a cisgender person, there's not just one way to be transgender. Some people make a social transition, which would be changing name, pronouns, appearance, dress, things like that. Some people make a medical transition with hormones. And so for me, I take testosterone, and a trans woman would take testosterone blockers or estrogen treatment. Some people do that, some people don't. And no one way is more valid way to be transgender than the other. And some people do a medical transition with surgery, but many do not. And
really?
So, you know, surgeries are expensive. They're not often covered by health insurance, and moving forward, they may never, ever be covered by health insurance, depending on what happens. Certain surgeries are not very well practiced. Mm. And it's not necessary to be a trans person. Some people are very comfortable with the bodies that they have, and feel no need to modify them with surgery. And so it's just important to understand that there are a variety of ways to be a trans person, and not every trans person's story is the same. You know, I can speak on behalf of trans people and advocate in a very general way, but my experience is very different than a trans woman, and it's very different than a trans person of color, and it's very different than a trans person in the South. And so, you know, while I can kind of speak generally to try to advocate for our community, I can't speak for every trans person. And so that's also important when I'm talking, I'm sharing my personal experience, right. But you know.
I'm
not
a doctor,
yeah.
I'm not the only voice, I am
exactly.
Not the dictionary.
Exactly, all of that.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's important for everyone to remember too. How often do you get asked the surgery question? Are people, I feel like, and granted, I guess I'm doing it now in terms of asking you all of these questions in an attempt to learn. But I mean more in terms of like being kind of overly invasive, much in the way that people, now that Brian and I have been married for 2 years, are saying, well, when are you having kids? Like,
yeah.
Maybe don't worry so much about my ovaries right now. And like, let's talk about like current events or, you know, scandal.
Puppies.
Or,
yeah.
let's talk about Ellie. I mean,
right.
We should always be talking about Ellie. But much in the way that, like, that's a pretty personal question. How often do you get asked questions that you're kind of like, don't worry about it?
2010 was when I publicly came out. And I would say the first couple of years, there was a lot of questioning that was going down a very bad path. My standard answer for that question, for the who do you sleep with question, because a lot of people are interested about my relationship. And now that, you know, they see my wedding ring in my photos, there's all sorts of questions. Humorously, if you Google my name, and I'm a great Google search, I'm a really good Google search, but if you Google my name, the second thing that pops up is Chris Mosier before photos.
Really?
And because everyone wants to see a good transition photo of, like, you know, like me as a woman. And then a question about my partner. So, like, those are the things that people are interested in. But
People, why are you creepy? If you search, yeah. If you search mine, which I don't Google myself anymore because it's too scary. But Brian said once that he like Googled my name because I was curious. I was like, you know, I'm not gonna do this myself. There's too many like guys. Don't be mean. Don't be mean out there.
Right.
And he Googled it and it was like Allie on the Run husband net worth.
Yeah, isn't that hilarious?
Why are people Googling that? B, like, do you want us to send you our tax returns?
Right.
Like,
right.
Will you sleep better at night if you know how much money we have in the bank? Because
yeah.
If it'll help you get sleep, like, we can have that conversation.
People,
it's fine.
So when people ask me, you know, the surgery question, the who do you sleep with or who's your partner question, my answer is always, are you hitting on me? Because it's like, why do you need to know?
Yeah,
if you're not trying to if you're not trying to get in my pants, then there's actually no reason for you to know what's in my pants.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, and, you're so sassy. I love that. You're so good.
It's well, humor is a great way to break up. You know, I don't want to make people feel super uncomfortable, and I don't want to shut people down from learning, but I also don't need this to be subjected to questions that you would never ask anybody else that question.
Yeah.
You're not going to go outside and just ask somebody what's in their pants. Right. Have you had the surgery? You know, I've had doctors ask me that when I broke my collarbone and I was in the back of the ambulance. The guy asked me, and I looked at him, and I was like, this has nothing to do with my broken collarbone. But I feel like a lot of people have put me in that position to try to answer that. Yeah. My answer was not always as sassy. I would really get upset by it.
For sure.
But that line of questioning, I think, has gone down since people have seen Laverne Cox in the media. They have seen Caitlyn Jenner, and they know that, you know, trans identity has kind of become part of the conversation. We had a president of the United States who mentioned it, you know, in their address, and that's the first time that it ever happened.
Not the current one.
Not the current one. So, you know, I think that's really important to know that as people's understanding in general went up, the questioning, you know, what I would say the offensive questioning has gone down.
Yeah. Let's talk about you as an athlete.
Let's do it.
You... When you said you, you know, came out on the internet and wrote about it, that was an Ironman.
Yeah.
And that's unique. Well, an Ironman is unique in many ways, but an Ironman requires what I call, as a former dancer, costume changes along the way. That is not what athletes call them, but I am not a triathlete, so I don't know what you guys call them. But to transition or to talk about it at an Ironman, what was that like? Because you're, you know, that's the first time, I hate to say your body was on display, but like, is that
my body
case? Like you're stripping out of a wetsuit and changing and in public spaces.
You actually wear clothes under the wetsuit. I don't know if you know that, but you do wear your kit under the wetsuit. So you're not completely naked under there. Yeah. Please don't ever go swimming.
I'm going to do a triathlon and I'm going to take my wetsuit off because I don't know.
So
they're gonna be like, this girl's naked under her.
Why does she have no clothes on? That's hilarious.
Well, they call them wetsuit strippers.
Yes,
they take them off.
They take the wetsuit off, but you have clothes underneath.
I thought then you ran into a tent and put your stuff on.
Reason why it's appropriate for someone to take your clothes off of you in a race. This is fantastic.
Okay, so I guess, you know what, forget trans 101. I apparently need triathlon 101.
Try 101. Okay, so yeah, I think that my body has been on display since I started triathlon because triathlon is a very body conscious sport.
Right.
Right, where running, you know, running shorts and singlets can kind of hide your body if you want them to. Triathlon stuff is skin tight, and it needs to be for, you know, you swim in that, and then you bike in it, and then you run in it. You don't have to costume change. Yeah, so you actually, in triathlons, many people bike in their wet tri kit, and then you run in your wet tri kit.
That sounds terrible.
It's not that bad. Yeah, it depends.
I'm just thinking of the chafing. I know they make...
Yeah, yeah. That's a whole different podcast.
Oh,
we'll
that's a different one. We're going to get Bodyglide to sponsor that one.
I had always felt really conscious, self-conscious in being a triathlete because of the kit. And so I remember my first races, even though I was racing as female at that time, that I, you know, felt really conscious about my chest or, you know, now in when I transitioned and started competing as male, I started thinking that people were package inspecting me. And that's kind of what I call it. There's not a lot to the imagination in these outfits, you know? And so, you know, I felt self-conscious about just being in the clothes. But I think as my confidence has grown, I also realized that I don't really care what other people, you know, me worrying about what a competitor or a fan or spectator is going to say about my body, as opposed to worrying about my race, is not going to help me.
Yeah, not productive.
It took me a long time to get there. There was a race in New York City, the New York City Triathlon that I was running, and, you know, in my skin tight kit running, I think it was probably the year after the first time I did it as male. And I'd done it as female too, so that was kind of my first big media thing was the New York Times covered me for doing that. A New York City police officer on the side of the road during the run yelled out, "Is that a guy or a girl?"
What?
And so, you know, just think about hearing that and think about whatever's pertinent to your identity that, you know, might be a big button for you. Really took me out of my game, to say the least. I was just astounded that that was not only, you know, like who said it to me, first of all, But the fact that that was being yelled during the race, and you know, it got me really inside my head about how I look to other people and, you know, what my experience was like there.
Did you just keep moving forward?
I just kept running. And I think
you
I probably
are
ran.
Such a good person.
I probably,
yeah, probably
ran a little
like
harder.
Negative split the crap
yeah,
out of it.
Yeah.
That human, if that were me, yeah, if I were you in that scenario, that police officer would not be alive. I would be in jail right now. What is wrong with people?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I realize is that a lot of people worry about other people more than they need to, right? Because me, you know, how I look in my athletic gear really has no impact on how you're going to live the rest of your life for that day. And it's the same thing. I know you experienced this with your blog, right? Of like, you, there are haters, there are trolls out there. Maybe not on your blog.
Everyone loved me.
Maybe not on your blog.
There is not hate sites dedicated to me.
You know, if you have an internet presence and you're somewhat of a public figure, you know this, that there are people who just kind of get off on talking negative and putting other people down. And I think I've been able to, and I don't know how this happened because it certainly got to me at the beginning, but partly as a internet presence and a, you know, sort of, you know, being present online and having these comments about me, but also being an athlete, I've been able to sort of just turn that into motivation. And, you know, part of it was also people didn't think that I would do well as a trans athlete. When I transitioned from female to male, they said, if you take a top performing female, you know, and I wasn't the top of the top by any means, and pull them over to the male category, they'll be a middle of the pack guy.
Right.
And I was like, no, I'm not a middle of the pack anything. Like, you, that phrase does not belong in the same paragraph as my name. And that was really my motivation to say, all right, like, let's just train my ass off and learn as much as I can learn and really dedicate myself to seeing how well I could do. And then every time I hear this, you can't do that, or you look like this, or, you know, just these negative comments was just more fuel.
So
and
the
motivation.
Nike commercial that makes me think of, which I will link to in the show notes.
Yeah.
Chris was in a Nike commercial. Was that just last year?
It was during the Olympics in 2016.
Yeah, yeah. And the whole basis for the commercial was it was a series, and yours was that they. Why don't you just describe? I'm like, and then they said, you are going to sound better describing the commercial, so take it away.
Yeah, so it was a really cool experience to work with Nike, and it was the first time that any major sporting brand had ever featured a transgender athlete. So, I mean, also a childhood dream come true. Obviously, you know, for any young person who is shooting hoops in the driveway during the Michael Jordan era, thinking that they're sinking the shot in the Nike commercial, you know, that was my childhood. It was just incredible to actually be a part of that. But I worked with them on the script, and so it was very cool that they actually wanted it to be authentic to my experience, and that was very much my experience. Of the commercial is it's part of the Unlimited campaign, and mine was Unlimited Courage. And so it was just a narrator saying, hey,
and
Chris.
You're the narrator. Oh, no, it's the person is talking, but you're answering.
Right, I'm answering while
this
I'm training.
This is why I was like, I'm not going to describe it. Let me chime in
Let's
and get
just
it wrong.
Link to the YouTube video that the narrator's asking, like, how'd you know you'd be fast enough? And I said, I didn't. How'd you know you'd be accepted by your team? You know, how'd you know that you'd be able to compete against men? And my response every time is, I didn't. And they say, didn't you want to? Sounds tough. Did you ever want to give up? Yeah, but I didn't. And so,
ooh, I got chills going all over again. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Everyone go and watch it because it's incredible and inspiring. When you were transitioning, how was your athletic performance affected?
Yeah, so this is a great question. And when I do public speaking stuff, a lot of what I'm talking about is participation and performance. And so, you know, I felt barriers to my participation as an athlete because I didn't know what the policies were. But in terms of my performance, before, I was really self-conscious about, you know, where I fit, what people would say about me, and I think that it held me back a little bit. Also, I just didn't feel comfortable as a person around other people in a lot of ways. When I made the decision to transition, there was a little rough time as I sort of reintegrated into society as a man, in men's spaces. Like, as someone who has navigated both a women's locker room and a men's locker room, you know, or a women's bathroom and a men's bathroom, you know, there are lots of stories, lots of experiences sure. and comparisons, and that's a whole...
We'll do a separate episode on that, too. You know, we have so many follow-ups.
Fascinating, fascinating. You know, but my performance as an athlete certainly increased and became better when I felt more comfortable with myself and could and fully show up in my training, fully show up in my racing, and you know, really dedicate myself to not worrying about what other people would think or say, or, you know, like, I won my first triathlon in my category, and I was embarrassed to tell people that because it was the women's group, you know, and I didn't win the race overall, I won my women's category, and so, you know, that didn't fit for me, so it was, like, great athletic achievement, but, you know, but in my life, but also, like, it didn't feel good, and as I, you know, could show up fully as myself and be in the place where I knew I belonged, I started to win races in 2014, and then eventually made Team USA in 2015, went to the World Championship in 2016. So my performance has just gotten better and better.
Pretty good.
So I actually think we didn't talk about how, you know, my favorite moments with you.
I know, I figured we would end with that.
Okay, you are a world-class supporter and cheerer.
Like, thank you.
Yeah, and you gave props to Brian as being like one of the best spectators ever, but really, you are world class.
Thank you. Yeah. I know. I actually think I'm better on the sidelines than I am in the race. I tend to not always execute on the race course, but I have never had a disappointing performance on the sidelines.
Never, never.
So that's just like for me to keep in mind when I'm considering my race goals for the future.
Right.
You're never not training. You were always, I remember when you lived here in the city, you had your bike in like under a stairwell so you could just ride on the trainer and you'd post a picture and I'm like, you'd be like in the pain cave. I'm like, no, Chris, you're like literally in a cave. That doesn't look safe. You work harder. And I don't care if you are transgender, cisgender. I don't care how you identify. Like, I don't think I know anyone that trains harder than you train.
Yeah.
So I just...
Thank you.
Giving you a high five.
Thanks. I think that's a really important part of what I want to share with the world is that, you know, testosterone is a performance-enhancing substance. And so I think that's an important piece of this, that there's no, I should not be competing against women because I am, you know, they would say I'm doping, mm-hmm. right? And so I got medical clearance from the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, from the World Anti-Doping Agency, to say testosterone use is medically necessary. I'm in the testing pool for drug testing as an athlete. And, you know, I'm monitored by a doctor to make sure that my testosterone levels are within the ranges of a typical male.
And that was, I was going to ask that. So, you know, when people try to pull the testosterone thing in it as like a sassy comment that they're going to post on Facebook with
right.
no scientific backing.
Right.
Your levels of testosterone or whatever else are the same
yeah.
as a cisgender male.
Right. They're,
like, you're not, like, super doped up on testosterone to the point that you're, like, you know,
yeah.
easily soaring past the competition. Like, no, you're literally leveling the playing field so that you're on the same playing field. Is that
right.
accurate?
Yeah. Yeah. And as an athlete, that's accurate. And, you know, and it's medically necessary for my transition.
Right.
And I'll take testosterone for the rest of my life. And so, you know, that's... People can say, oh, your performance increased because you started taking testosterone. And part of that is true, but also they don't see that I am, you know, up in the morning and in the pool at night and putting in the work that I need to do.
I see it. It's on Instagram.
It is on Instagram, the Chris Mosier.
I like it every time. We'll link to it. Chris's, all his social links are in the show notes, as always.
Awesome.
What is your advice for lack of a better phrase, dealing with the haters?
I think that I spent so much time worrying about what other people would think or feel or how they would react to my transition that it really delayed me in becoming fully myself. I was so concerned about how people at work would handle it or how my athletic team would handle it or how my parents would handle it that it delayed me doing what I knew what was best, you know, for me. So I would just say that they, you know, people need to do what they know, what they feel deep down in their gut is right for them and not be concerned with how other people would react to it because everybody has an opinion, everybody on the internet has an opinion and you can't make all people happy but you're the one who has to live your life every single day. And so it really comes down to making the right choices for you. And it's not safe or comfortable for everybody to be out as a trans person. You know, that's part of the reason why maybe you didn't know any trans people before. It's, you know, the world is not a safe space for all trans people, and it's an identity that doesn't necessarily have to, it's not visible always, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't show up, and if people don't talk about it, that's maybe not part of the experience that they share with you. So, you know, I sort of felt that. I wanted to be another athlete. There was a time where I was like, I don't want to be the trans athlete all the time. Like, let's talk about how I did in this race, as opposed to being, you know, transgender athlete does such and such.
Yep.
You know, but at the same time, for me, I realize it's really important to be that trans athlete, to talk about that, because I know there are young people out there who don't have a role model to look to, and maybe feel like that, how I felt, like they
were
the
only one. Well, that's your catchphrase.
Right. I want to be the person that I needed 10, 15 years ago. I want to be the person that I needed when I was younger.
I love that. And yeah. Are you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
What can I do? What can people in this world do to help make this a safe place for trans people? And how can we be advocates for you?
Yeah, so the term ally is someone who's an active supporter.
Sounds
for,
a lot like Allie.
It so does. an active supporter for others. And so, you know, part of that is not just changing your Facebook profile picture during Pride Month with the rainbow flag, yep. right? That's cool, and we love that visual show of support, or when tragedies happen in our communities that there's, you know, an uproar about it. And I think more and more there is that, but also it's being an active ally. Right, and so it's not being silent when there are injustices, and it can be something as simple as correcting people's pronouns if they misgender someone, or you know, in particularly like around Caitlyn Jenner, I see this around a lot, referring to her as her old name, or you know, former
it
pronouns.
Makes me cringe.
Yeah, and it's just people who either don't understand or are mm-hmm. intentionally being a jerk, but that not understanding part is a big deal. You don't know what you don't know. That's part of the reason why I'm so open to answering questions, is because you don't know if it's an offensive question or not. Terminology changes so quickly, you might not know if you're using appropriate terminology mm-hmm. or not. But if you know better, it's you have to stand up and say something, right? And so if friends make a transphobic joke, you know, to step in
punch
and say,
in the face.
Right? And so this is the difference between you and me again, thick skin and how a calm reaction.
But, like rage blackouts.
Right. That you know, you step in and say, you know, we don't talk like that. Like, that's not the right language.
Yep.
Or my favorite one, and I tell this to sports teams when I'm working with college athletes, high school athletes, is just to say, hey, we don't use that language. We're better than that. Because a lot of what people use in sport is casually homophobic language, in which transphobia falls in there as well, and casually sexist language. So if you think about the words that people use when they're putting down their opponents, or they're talking about somebody who's underperforming, you know, I won't use the words right now, but the words is the phrases, the words and the phrases that they use are oftentimes homophobic and transphobic and sexist. It's equating you know, good performance to masculinity. It's talking down about, you know, equating someone who's underperforming with femininity or being a woman. And it's so problematic. It's so deeply sexist, and it's so deeply homophobic in the way that people talk. And so it's the responsibility of allies to step in and make sure that it's not always LGBTQ people who have to advocate and say, hey, you're being offensive to me. I'm here in the room. You know, so really relying on other people.
Yeah. Well, I hope that people listening, I hope this episode has been helpful. We're not done.
Yeah.
I hope that this has been helpful. I also hope that next time someone does say something offensive and I'm there and I, you know, attempt to beat the crap out of them, that one of you listening, or you, Chris, will be the person to come bail me out every single time. You're going to start getting phone calls. I'm going to be like, Chris, I was such a good advocate. Thank you. Come bail me out.
Right.
You're going to be like, no, that's not.
Stop hitting people.
Yeah, like, we're better than that.
Right, exactly.
All right, before we get into our final round of rapid fire questions, tell me about You Can Play, which is the organization that you work for. Give us the rundown. What is You Can Play? What is your role within the organization, and why should absolutely everyone be on board with what you guys are doing?
Yeah, so what I was just talking about with casual homophobia is a lot of the work that I'm doing with You Can Play. You Can Play is a nonprofit organization that our tagline is, if you can play, you can play. We believe that athletes should be judged on their competitive skill, competitive desire, their skills, their dedication to a sport and not on their sexual orientation and or their gender identity. All athletes should have the opportunity to participate in sport, and it should be a safe, respectful, and inclusive environment. And so we really work to provide visibility and awareness for LGBTQ athletes, coaches, and fans, and to really try to shape more respectful spaces, more inclusive spaces in professional and recreational and collegiate sports. And so you're really just sending that message. If you can play, you can play. And that language really matters. And so I'm the Vice President of Program Development and Community Relations. I oversee our regional board members, who are just a super group of volunteers who help spread the message of You Can Play. I'm doing speaking at colleges and universities, organizations, to share this message of the impacts of casually homophobic language and trying to shape and change locker rooms and athletic spaces so that organizations can really show up for their LGBTQ athletes, coaches, and fans, even if there aren't out athletes in the organization.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that it's not just, oh, well, we're going to talk to your team today because you guys have someone on your team who's transgender. Like, you
right.
need this.
Right.
I love that it's this, like, everyone needs to know this and
yeah.
hear
yeah.
it. How can we support You Can Play?
So go to youcanplayproject.org or You Can Play Team on any of the socials and check out the work that we do. We had an amazing month in February with some activations with the NHL, professional hockey players using rainbow pride tape on their sticks and really just spreading this message of inclusion and respect. We've done some really great collegiate events, and we have a lot more activities coming up. And so we work with individual teams and leagues, and you know, it's really just about spreading that visibility and doing the educational piece. So people can contact me through my social media if they're interested in getting involved, reach out to You Can Play. And you know, we appreciate all of the allies and fans and support for our organization, because change isn't going to happen just by having a couple of LGBT athletes out, right? It needs to be really large cultural change within sport to say, we don't use this language anymore. This is not something. You know, I think we saw it during the election when we heard about locker room talk and how, yeah, that's right.
Trying to block it out
I
of my
know,
memory.
Sorry.
You just brought it back up.
I'm sorry. But, you know, that can't be a part of our culture. We
yeah.
need to move towards a culture of respect and inclusion, knowing that each of us brings something different to the team, and all of our backgrounds and who we are as people makes us better. And so, you know, when we can show up in support of our teammates, we become better teams. And we become better athletes when we can authentically show up and not worry about people saying things or it being a safe environment. And so I'm so honored to do this work because it's such a passion of mine. And you know, I really am living the dream in doing the work that I would do totally for free, you know, because it's so important to me.
Yeah. Well, as someone who is a fan of everything we have discussed today, I just want to say thank you, because you've taught me so much. And I think that one thing with me, like, I know we live in a, you know, we're in the generation now of selectivism, right? Like, of changing our profile pictures, and that's all nice. And I think my thing is often I don't know what to do. Like, even with the most current election, you know, people are saying, this is a problem. And I'm like, well, I don't know how to help until I have someone who says, call this number and say this, you
right.
know, and that stuff I think is really helpful in, And another thing that you have reminded me of that I try to tell myself all the time is, like, might it be uncomfortable to say to someone, like, hey, you shouldn't speak like that? Yeah, no, I don't want to have to say that to a colleague or someone who's being inappropriate. But remembering that the person on the receiving end of that actual comment is probably a lot more uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
or is that's way less fun for them than it is for me to just say, like, hey, don't be a jerk.
Right.
So just remembering to use our voices for positive change.
Yeah.
And that I think that can go a long way, because there's a lot of work to be done.
Certainly the best thing that allies did for me in my transition was to make, you know, to interrupt those really casual comments, the misgendering through pronouns or kind of side comments that people made, so that I didn't have to do that, because it felt
yeah.
so incredibly uncomfortable for me. And I felt so ashamed. Like, deep down, ashamed to have to correct someone and be like,
right.
actually, it's he. And, you know, it made me feel something about myself. Like, why are people not seeing me as I see myself? But when, you know, my wife would step in and rephrase something, you know, oh, Chris, yeah, he went to go get his car keys. And it just, it made all the difference to have somebody else do that really casually and not have to have it be me all the time. So allies are such an important part of, you know, the existence of any group that's, you know, under in discriminatory situations and certainly in the work that I do in sports.
Yeah, so be a good ally, make your voice heard in a positive way, don't end up in jail, or if you do, you'll probably see me there, so we'll have a good time.
This got Chris, dark kind of fast.
Sorry. The Ally on the Run show, you never know where it's going to end up. Except you do. It ends up with the sprint to the finish round, or as I was corrected today at November Project, our captain of the official November Project racing team, his name is Miles. Miles, if you're listening, I love you so much. Miles always tells us to sprint through the finish. You're not done when you're at the line, you're done when you're through the line. So we are rephrasing this. Casey, if you're listening, thank you for correcting that today. Chris, are you ready to sprint through the finish?
Home stretch.
Home stretch. What would your last meal on earth be?
Burrito. Veggie burrito.
Okay. Are you vegetarian?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. We have so many follow-up episodes to do. Favorite movie?
Fight Club.
Greatest fear?
Losing my teeth, getting my teeth kicked in, getting in a bike accident where my teeth are somehow impacted and I break them.
You can get new ones.
Biggest fear, hands down.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Favorite race you've ever done?
Ironman Florida.
Favorite place you've ever run?
Central Park.
Yeah, such a good one. Yeah. Do you have a go-to mantra for races or tough workouts?
For tough races, I'm light, I'm fast, I'm strong, I'm ready. Ooh. It's so weird, but yeah.
No, I like it. Hey, yeah. It's what works.
It goes with the footfalls when I'm running.
Yeah. Say it again.
I'm light, I'm fast, I'm strong, I'm ready.
Ooh, me too.
Yeah.
What is your go-to breakfast?
Three eggs scrambled with sweet potato.
Nice, hearty. Yeah. Saturday long run or Sunday long run?
Sunday long run.
What is your favorite app?
Strava.
Yeah. You're hosting a dinner party. You get to have five guests. Who are they?
Oh, this one I did not prepare for.
I know, this is the hardest. This is the hardest one. This one's really hard.
Yeah, I know people invite their family and their pets and stuff.
No way, like, dude. I'm with like Beyonce, Ellen, Barack Obama, and my dog.
Oh, two more. One more.
Oh, for me? No, those were just top of my head. I wouldn't have Beyonce. I would have Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, Ellen DeGeneres.
Yeah.
I mean, I would want Brian there because he's awesome. Mm-hmm. And I would need someone to like take photos for Instagram. And Brian would do a good job of that. And then I would get one more person. Yeah, you're right. This is a like pretty loaded question. I shouldn't spring this on people.
No, but I thank you so much for buying me the time to think about it. I didn't hear any of the what you just said.
It's
actually.
Fine.
So mine would be David Beckham, as I said, because.
Oh, yeah.
We might need a private time.
Yeah, fair enough. Like so awkward. Fair enough.
David Beckham, Lance Armstrong, Justin Timberlake, total wild card, Serena Williams, and Michael Jordan. Whoa. Would be like
that
the
is a
weirdest,
solid dinner party. I'm gonna be like on the outside of the house, just like, peering in through the window, like, guys, hey, it's me, and they'll be like, how did you get out of jail? Right. Like, damn it, Allison. What do you listen to when you run?
Ally on the Run podcast.
Oh, you are on brand and on fire. and lastly, what you wanted to talk about your favorite memories with me?
I totally wanted to talk about my favorite memories.
What are your
memories
favorite memories?
You. Okay, so I don't remember how we first met. I mean, obviously November Project.
I actually don't either.
I don't remember the first
time. I don't remember the moment.
Yeah, yeah. But
it was magical, probably.
Probably magical. We've had so many great hugs exchanged.
Yeah.
As I said, world-class hugger. But there are a couple of moments that I really absolutely love, and the one is that it's happened multiple times. You have this story about this little dog that bit you?
The Chihuahua. Yeah, I saw it this morning.
Did you really? And you didn't freak out. So hearing you retell this story, I have two different photo series of you telling this story to other people that I took photos the entire time that you were telling it. and your face is the exact same.
I've never seen these photos. I told this story this morning, Mosher.
You would kill me if you saw these photos, but they're the same. You wouldn't like them, but and no one. I'm not putting them online or anything, so don't Google for them. But it's so amazing to hear you tell this story. It's just like one of the most wonderful things. And I know it was very traumatic for you. You get so fired up about it.
Because here's the deal, okay? The year was 2008. I was a new runner. There is this woman. I hope she. You know what? I don't even mind if she's listening because she needs to know this. So she has like two chihuahuas and she walks them in a stroller along the East River every morning. And power to this woman, because I lived up there in 2007 and 2008. And I still, when we go to November Project, those workouts are up there. She still walks those damn dogs in the stroller every day. And great, everyone needs fresh air. But they're little yippy chihuahuas. And one of them, while I was running one day, ran up behind me and it actually bit the little bone on my ankle.
She's making the faces right now, as a side note.
I am worked up. And I looked at her and I was like, your dog just bit me. And you guys know I freaking love dogs. I don't even mind if a dog bites me, but those little dogs were kind of scary and yippy. And she just like made a face at me like, not my problem. And I was like, I love dogs, but I'm about to punt it into the East River.
So violent.
But I love dogs. Definitely am going to jail at some point. Anyway, that's the story. I'm glad that's your favorite memory of me is my trauma.
I mean, it's just so amazing. The photos, I think, are more my favorite memory. Just,
yeah, probably really cute.
They're really, really amazing. Running into you in Central Park during the New York City Half Marathon, where you were cheering and I was running, and then we cheered together.
Yeah.
As I said, world-class sport and cheer.
I was wearing a gray shirt, I remember.
Yeah, and it was fantastic, and that was one of my favorite moments. But also, I just have really great memories of doing November Project workouts with you and running and talking and talking about going to the bathroom and
always talking about going to the bathroom.
Same.
I'm either complaining about that chihuahua or I'm talking about going to the bathroom. I would say that would sum up my life.
It's like 90% of the conversation.
It really is. The other 10%, I mean, I guess, yeah, no, there's no other 10%.
Yeah.
Probably food, but yeah, we've had some good times and I'm glad we got to have this one today.
Yeah.
Mosher.
Same. This is a new favorite memory.
Yeah, me too. Seriously though, thank you for being a voice, for being an advocate, and for being so open and willing to have these conversations with people like me who just want to learn so that we don't ask the offensive questions. Like, I don't ever want to offend someone. I don't care who we're talking about. I don't want to be offensive. Mm-hmm. And I want to know how to be respectful and be politically correct and be an ally. So thank you for helping me and hopefully some people listening to this. Thank you for being an educator.
Yeah, you don't know what you don't know. And so the biggest thing is we can't begin to have these conversations until we all have the same language, right? And so at the very basics, I would say people should go and learn the terminology, right? Because terminology changes over time. I'll direct people to my website, which is transathlete.com. Transathlete, like one athlete, .com, and people can learn just basic LGBTQ terminology so that you can feel a little bit more comfortable having these conversations, because statistically speaking, you know gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people, they are in your life. And you know, it's very much similar to the way that we stumble around politics or race or religion, that we don't want to offend people, but it's important that we have conversations because it's part of our identities and part of our daily existence.
Yeah,
so,
and it shouldn't be an uncomfortable thing.
It doesn't need to be, absolutely. And
the more
so I appreciate
I talk about it,
you.
The better.
I appreciate you asking the questions so that you know you can share this with your audience.
And I've never seen a ghost, so statistically speaking, I think I'm on the side I want to be on. So
right.
Awesome. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
You're the best.
And that's episode 13. Big, big, big thanks to Chris Mosher for taking the time to chat with me in person and to all of you for listening. If you need a little motivation or inspiration to get through the rest of your run today or to take on any challenges you have on the horizon, just remember what Chris says. Be the person you needed when you were younger. Remember, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at AllieOnTheRun1 or on my blog, AllieOnTheRunBlog.com. And Allie is just A-L-I. Very short, very sweet, very simple. I'll see you right back here on Tuesday for episode 14. And until then, have a stellar day. And thanks for joining me on the run.